Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Hello and welcome into the Women in League Round preview show. This is the Six Again podcast. After a very turbulent, we'll say, a few days of rugby league, we're a day away from the kickoff of the 16th Women in League Round, and we'll be covering that.
Stop. You have got news to tell everybody before we get into this about what happened yesterday to you. Tell the kids about what just happened.
The Dylan.
Yeah. Come on. It's good news,
after everyone. Huge Bucks weekend. Very tired. Manly supporter. Been through a lot. Get home from work and we have a cat. Second time this has happened to me.
I will admit, his last cat. So a couple of years ago, we went to the grand final to watch it at his place. First time my partner's ever really come to a football day with everyone. Yeah. She was like, oh yeah, cool, wore a Melbourne jersey because Melbourne were playing. Mm-hmm. We had to spend the day using Adam's blower to fight off the cat who kept attacking us every time we stepped in front of the house.
Oh, the leaf blower.
That was a previous cat. Oh yeah, the old leaf blower on Weet-Bix.
Satan in fur.
But yeah, now Adam's got a cat. He's clearly excited, super cute. Mads just brought it in to show me. It's really, yeah, it's awesome. And I'm sure Adam, like I said to him 5 minutes ago, there'll be a time when there's just a cat on his lap and he'll be petting it and he'll be enjoying himself, loving life. He'll fall in love with it, I bet you.
I was ecstatic. Far out, thing is, throw that at me. Arr. Top of everything else. Obviously, we'll be touching on the Seagulls situation. There's been some coaches let go at St. George Dragons we'll be looking at. There's been a player loan between Melbourne and West Tigers. The first player in NRL history, I think, suspended for a head clash. That'll be interesting. That could, rugby league opening another can of worms. Who would have thought? But we'll go into that, and then we'll, yeah, have a look at the previews of all the games for the weekend. I'm going to just do this because I'll need it again, I think. Yeah. Another Hop Nation beer, remembering to get your tips in this week. Hop Nation Brewing Co. sponsoring our footy tipping comp with only 7 rounds to go, and we'll be giving you some details of the merch pack in the next couple of weeks. So, Women in League Round.
Who knew?
I did, because it's been advertised everywhere.
Not really.
It really has. It's just been overshadowed by other people, that's all. Now, we've had a couple of days to, we haven't had to digest the Manly situation, but as a fan of the club, what I said to Jared on the message last night.
You said a lot of things. Adam was in a fucking shit mood last night about this whole thing. He was well off everything.
I opened my heart. It's a group chat, and it just turned into anger.
It was a group chat between me, Will, and Adam. And I honestly got to a point where I actually offered him a cuddle. I offered to drive an hour down to the airport and just give him a bit of a snuggle because he sounded like he needed it.
I think, yeah, thank you. Now, Jared started off by, putting something else up that someone else had posted, like taking the gesture from the Seagulls. And he's like, how are you going? I went, you know what? Honestly, this, as a Manly fan, it hurts this last couple of days. I didn't realize I laid in bed last night how much of a mental drag it had been, going from the highs of what the club had done to the lows of the minorities, which is ironic, of people against it.
And it turns out and it made it so much better. There's a cat laying on your shoulder.
No. But yeah, thank you. It wasn't till this afternoon when I saw a quote by Trent Robinson that I was able to finally put into words like what I thought about the whole thing. And it was just so simple. And I think there was a key message in between everything that's being missed. And this is the only thing we're going to send on it because it's just had a couple of days to sit. So Trent Robinson said, "It's unfortunate in 2022 that we're still having this conversation. Everyone is equal. To not be inclusive and not say it's okay to be who you are is unacceptable." And the people under that were saying, "Yeah, but what about the beliefs of the players and all that sort of stuff that stood down?" I went, yeah, Trent Robinson means those players as well. It's I think people are getting caught up in the prejudice of a minority group without actually realizing what, or without actually remembering what the specific message is.
Look, it's a hard subject, but
it's really nice.
Throughout the whole thing, I'm really, and Adam is definitely going to back me up on this one, I'm really proud of Des Hazard and Cherry Evans for the press conference they did. They done a really good job. But what shitted me off to begin with was that they had to do
apology?
It. Oh, I guess. No, that they were the ones trotted out in front of the media to have that conversation because what's come out today, Manly been planning this for a decent amount of time because of the whole Hugh Jackman thing, because he was given a jersey about a month and a half ago. So the
huge
thing was planned for a long time. Your number one supporter, supposedly. And then, so that's okay. So the Manly board, and I can understand because I teed off a little bit this afternoon and went, fuck the Manly board. They should have handled this better. But, and then Adam and Wild kind of put me in a place and go, well, why did the Manly board have to tell the players? Because it's just a jersey. And the Manly board just went, you know what? We're going to do this. This is going to be groundbreaking and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even, I'm assuming that they just assumed that the players would be on board with this. Like, it's not a hard, they didn't think it'd be a hard thing to get behind. They were wrong. And so that part, they with their assumption, you can't really fault for it because it's pretty easy assumption to make. But the fact that they made this decision and then a while ago,
mm-hmm.
and then it's blown up so much. Hazard was not in that boardroom, I guarantee you, talking about rainbow stripes in the mm-hmm. jersey, because that is not the priority Hazard has in that club. Like, he's out in the field all the time. Guarantee you, Cherry Evans wasn't in the decision-making originally to do this shit. And then they're the one trotted out in front of the media to say words that, while was delivered heartfelt and legitimately, and you felt, they meant it. It was clearly scripted by someone else, because it's not how Hazler and Cherry talk usually.
Oh, no, Hazler's was pretty similar.
Yeah, but, like, my issue with, it does remind me, and Adam kind of arced up at this last night, but it does remind me of the West Tigers.
No.
The board made a groundbreaking decision, as you did. But what the board did, they made a decision. It backfired on them. And then they made the player and the coach front up about it. That's a Tigers move all over. If that happened at Melbourne, if that happened at Broncos right now with the ex-Melbourne guy, Bill Donaghy there, if that happened at Roosters, what?
Dave Donaghy.
If it happened at Roosters. If that happened at Pembroke, it happened at Bulldogs. Like, with the heavy, like, the solid front office, the front office would have made that decision. There's no way Melbourne would have made that decision and fronted up with Craig Bellamy and
fucking... See, on anything else, I would have supported you on that, but this has never happened, so... And we're seeing the back... I agree with...
The board should have fronted up.
Yes.
Hazler and Cherry should not have had to go through that. That's not their place.
Yeah, that's the bit that I agree with. Now, I'm going to go back on something already that I said a couple of days ago now that I've had time to think about it, where he said that the players should have been consulted. Hasler and Cherry Evans wouldn't have been in that room when the Seagulls are planning their Indigenous jersey. They wouldn't have been in the room when they're planning a Women in League jersey, if they were doing one. They wouldn't have been in the room if they're planning a Members Only jersey. There's no reason why they'd be in the room for this one. The players have all run out in Indigenous jersey. They could have stood down. They've run out in Women League jersey before. They could have stood down. They've run out in a freaking military print one. They could have stood down. They chose to do it on this one. They
should have won that one. That was a horrible jersey.
Yeah, that was horrible. I think even if the Manly board consulted the players, they would have and should have still gone ahead with it because this is bigger than them. I definitely don't agree with Cherry Evans and Hasler having to be the ones there in the press conference. It should be the board or it should be the seven players who stood down to explain their reasoning.
I wouldn't mind seeing the seven players trotted out to make them, but yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
I'm sorry, but their values and beliefs isn't as strong enough.
Well, they haven't actually released a statement as to why they their thoughts behind it, which is I think's wrong.
How I end up saying it, this vendetta, I guess, of the minority against the LGBTQ plus community, that's not what this jersey isn't specifically representing those demographics. It's part of that. But Hasler said it very clearly. The Manly Seagulls website said it very clearly. This jersey represents every single person involved in rugby league or wants to be involved in rugby league. Any kid, anywhere, from any race, background, sexuality, height, weight, whatever, that jersey is for that person. The message is every single person can play rugby league. That includes the players who chose to stand down. It includes players with a religious background. It includes players with an atheist background. It includes players who are heterosexual, homosexual. It's saying this game is available for every single person. Now, if you don't agree with that and you decide to step down, fine. That's on them. But make sure you do it for the other rounds as well. This jersey decision does not exclude the players and their values and their beliefs. Inclusion is for every single player. They're choosing not to take part in it. That's on them. It's as simple as that. It'd literally be like Sheridans and Foran not playing in a Polynesian heritage round.
Yeah, look, it is. Yeah, so...
Look, and trust me, that would have nothing to do with their religious background.
All we can say is this isn't over.
No, hopefully it keeps building. Keep the rage up.
No, well, my point is that, you know, next year, Peter Vlade's come out and said he'd like to do a pride round for every club. And it's not over. So we'll just have to wait and see on this one.
So can I just segue it into the next one?
Yeah.
You know who else used to not be wanted or invited into rugby league because it was a man's sport? Women. Wow. At one point, they weren't included either. But they are now. And we're 16 years into the Women in League round, which wouldn't have happened if someone hadn't stood up right at the start. So let's celebrate that person. Or duo, actually. So, rugby league women, the females, like it's booming now. Rugby league for women has never been in a better spot. The pioneers of that movement started in the 1920s. So, Australian rugby league had just been in its teenage years. And two young women from North Sydney, Molly Kane and Nellie Doherty, wrote a letter to the New South Wales Rugby League requesting assistance to create a women's rugby league competition. The letter outlined the success of women's soccer in England and France and how that would translate to similar success in Sydney. Now, the New South Wales Rugby League Committee determined the timing was unsuitable for them to assist the ladies at the time. However, only 3 days after that, they had a complete change of heart and agreed to provide the ladies with all the assistance that are required to form clubs and a competition. It's amazing. 3 day turnaround. It's crazy. It's almost like this week. And you look at where the women's game is now, and it's had a huge growth, obviously, over the last 3 to 5 years, and it will continue to grow. And it just takes, in this case, two women to be the pioneers. And hopefully we saw a pioneer club this week. And the two kind of relate to each other, because I was asked a question today by one of my students, actually a female rugby league player, and said, do you think NRLW players would have done the same thing? And I went, that's actually a really good question, because it's more well known that there are a lot more players in the women's league from minority groups. So that would have been really interesting to see. But I couldn't give her an answer because I don't know. Now, it's amazing that we have most people that have watched rugby league for a long time can say some of the legendary male players off by heart and their names. Wonder how many people, even by the end of this episode, will remember the two women I spoke about a couple of minutes ago, the pioneers for the women's game, and where it is today. So a cool little historical story for those who enjoy their rugby league history. I was waiting for Jared to chip in then. Alrighty. So this brings us into the launch of Women in League Round, and Peter Vallandis came out with a pretty strong statement saying, we want to be number one. He wants rugby league to be the number one sport for female participants in Australia. And that's a monumental task to undertake, considering the stranglehold netball has had on the Australian population, female population, for however many years, to the point where netball is the fastest growing male sport. So it's a huge statement to make. The steps being made, the first ever women's CBA will be signed off later this year. He wants to have 17 teams in the comp. The salary cap's going up 30 to 40% next year.
I'll be interested to read that CBA. That'd be good to read.
Yeah. So I love this quote. I'd pay any admission price to go and watch Emma Tonegado play. She'll attract new fans to the game. We know she's already doing that, and not just her. And Abdo said the involvement of women at all levels, both on and off the field, was growing through a why not attitude and would only continue to push barriers each season. All of this sort of stuff has been, should be even more relevant this week with the other events that have occurred. This is the stuff Peter Vallandis should be focusing his attention on. Stay the hell away from the game itself. Do this part. You're a businessman. Grow it as a business, because
yeah, did we even get to the Australian selection thing?
The women's?
No, the men's. Do we even get that he's a selector now? To that, we talked about that?
Yeah, that's just dumb.
Oh, fuck, yeah, mate.
Stay the hell away from the game itself. Market it, grow it, do all the financials and the business, and work with all the CEOs and all that sort of stuff, because you're damn good at it. Get it to the point where my daughter's 4 years old. If she grows up and wants to be a rugby league player, she can make a better living doing that than I'll be able to as a teacher, because then she'll be on par with the male athletes.
Annabelle better give us tickets to all her games.
Oh, bloody hell. She's like, no, Dad, it'll be embarrassing. With a guy like this in charge, there's a chance that that's going to happen. And
you already embarrass Annabelle, don't you?
Oh, 100%. So, yeah, I think like there's some big statements to make, and he'll fall on his sword if he doesn't achieve stuff like that. But from what we've seen with the growth of the women's game already, you got to back
what
him
we've
in.
Seen from the from him, like when he predicts stuff like this, shit works. You know what I mean? Like shit actually sticks.
Yeah, that's a quote that we want. Women's in league round, shit sticks.
That's right.
Oh, man. That's horrible, horrible, horrible stuff. Jared comes from a massive rugby league family. He has a mother still involved in rugby league, true?
Oh, yeah, she'll be involved forever, mum.
Kelly's going to the AFL playing route at the moment, but she still helps out with with our home club.
She goes to it, but didn't she help out? But yeah, Kelly's very, very heavily involved in her AFL club. So we
won't hold that against her. So
she's played more rugby league games than most people anyway, and played for the she's pretty good.
Jared's older sister's a passionate Sharks supporter. My daughter's got her own Manly Seagulls dress and loves cheering on the team. My wife's a Cowboys supporter. We've taken the kids along to games.
My missus is Melbourne, and Ali has. We made a deal this year that whoever wins the Origin series, she can support them until she grows old enough to make decisions. So she's a Queensland supporter, but the good thing about having so many people in our family, so many influences and friends and stuff like that, Ali has practically every team clothing. So Adam's given us Manly stuff. So Ali's worn that. Adam's also given us little Cowboys gear. She wears that every so often. She's obviously got Newcastle, Melbourne gear, but she's got Parramatta, Penrith, Sharks. Yeah, she's got everything. And she can't choose what she wears, but she looks cute in all of it. So, yeah, she does all right for herself.
And it goes all the way back to my nana hates but loves telling us this story about how she used to be able to just walk down to Brookie, taking my dad and his brother down to watch the game, and enjoyed doing it to the point where they versed Parramatta twice in a season, both at Brookie, and couldn't stand the swearing and vulgar comments coming from the Parramatta supporters on the hill, and never went back. But
that's awesome. Sorry. I love that.
And it's frustrating but hilarious to watch a footy game with my nan, because she actually like leans the direction that she wants the players to run. So you sit next to her on the couch, she'll just have her like pushing into you.
Is she right?
Sorry?
Did she pick the right direction?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's very switched on. She just gets so nervous. It's actually quite funny. It's a massive celebration round. It's going to be bigger and better than ever. Embrace it. Celebrate it, just like everything else this week. And we just want to finish on both these topics with a message that was sent in by one of our longtime supporters. We met the real name today. So this fella's in our footy tipping comp. We're not going to say any names out here, because he has given us some personal personal stories here, in that with Manly coming out with the Pride jersey in Women in League round, he's talked about the two members in his family who I guess have been misrepresented in society, and how big a deal it is what Manly have done. And I'm just going to finish off with the last two sentences he messaged in. All aspects of life exist across a spectrum of experience. Love and respect is the key. And this person hasn't reached out to us before.
yeah.
And has been a listener since the start, because we've seen the name pop up. So if this is a catalyst for people to be able to talk about this and share experiences, it's worth seven players standing down, in my opinion. And that's my club.
Yeah, and it was actually really funny, because in the past, let's say that a lot of don't agree with my opinions. I've got a few messages in my time about into our social medias, and it started with Jared should, and I just read it and went, "Oh no, here we go."
Jared should not talk anymore. But, Jared should.
First message. Came up something that happened with a new thing today, which we will get to. But yeah, I think all three of us would have read that and just went, "Oh shit, here we go again."
What's gonna happen?
But yeah, thanks for reaching out, mate.
When I opened the Twitter account this morning, there was 16 comments and they went, oh boy, here we go. All right, let's move along here. We will talk about signings and that a little bit later on, but we are holding out to see if Wall will be able to join us. We're going to leave the St. George stuff because I really want to get his opinion on it. So we are going to move along to the player loan of David Norfoluma going to Melbourne Storm for the rest of the 2022 season, and then returning to West Tigers for 2023. So for the last few weeks, Melbourne Storm have been asking around clubs for players, specifically outside backs for the rest of the season, to try and replace Xavier Coates, Remy Smith and Ryan Pappenhausen. So names that have been popping up, Dane Laurie, Rhys Walsh, Josh Adokar. And so they picked up David Norfoluma. Now, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. It wasn't until I had a look at a comment going, why? It seems, so I think the comment's saying like, it seems weird to me that one NRL club was asking other NRL clubs for help. And then another club went, yeah, all right. And just gave them one of their best players. When you look at it like that, it's really weird because usually in a situation like this, the club giving Melbourne a player would get something in return, similar to Harry Paul Momorowski the other year.
Hold up. It's not exactly like that. It's not this giving. So 3 years ago, Dave Norfoluma signed a very high-end contract for a winger.
Mm-hmm.
At the Tigers, it was in the range of five to 600,000. They try to get rid of him a year later. Last year, he was overlooked for captain in a five-man captaincy group with two of those players not even being there yet, with Tyrone Peachy and Cameron Marlow. And he's on the out of there. They got some young guys there, and the Tigers want to get rid of his contract. It's taken up. So Melbourne agreed to take part of his contract.
No.
You say they don't get anything, a fair chunk out of it.
No, because he's back with Melbourne Tigers next year.
No, he's not. He's at Melbourne.
No, he's not. It's only a loan. It's a loan, not a trade. He's only loaned till the end of this season. And then he's back at Tigers. Anyway. He's signed at Tigers till the end of 2025. On 525K, which is perfectly reasonable.
For him, but not with the back-end contracts that Melt like they have.
Yeah, but they've gotten rid of most of those. There's only, like, you look at the Tigers, players that they've got under contract till 2024, Apisai Corrissair, Zane Musgrove, a guy I haven't heard of, Rua Nagatakura, Norfoluma, Isaiah Papali'i, Jake Simkin, Alex Twile, Stefano Udomekano. They're the only players they've got signed for 2024. So their salary cap's not an issue.
Either way, I don't see how this is an issue for them at all.
I love, and people have listened to this before, I love trades. I think the NRL needs to do more of them. What I haven't seen is one club just going, here, have one of our players and we want nothing back. So I want to see, I don't think we will. But to me, there has to be something behind the scenes that they're getting. We may not know about it, but it might be a future consideration, favour.
Harry Grant's coming back.
But, like, West Tigers aren't going to make the finals or do any damage this year. And nothing's to say that Norfoluma playing for Melbourne for the rest of the season could increase the chance of injury, but there's a chance he's going to play an extra 3 to 4 games that the West Tigers wouldn't be playing, where he could injure himself and rule himself out for next year. Now, how is that not a consideration for the Tigers in not getting someone back? Because the Warriors said that Melbourne went after the Rhys Walsh 3 times, which I've been asking them to do. And the Warriors kept saying, no, he's one of our players. You're not just having him. He's signed with us and we're only releasing him from his contract for specific reasons. and that's to go play close to his family. We're not releasing him from his contract to go play for you guys as a stepping stone to go play for another club. No. And they believe that if that other stuff hadn't happened, he'd still be a Warriors player. I was like, that's great. That's sentiment and all that. But he's not going to be there next year. If you can get something out of Melbourne to have Reece Walsh for the rest of the year, they would have had to explore that. It's just bad business if you don't.
I couldn't care less, to be honest.
Yes. If I'm the Warriors, I'm going, sweet, you can have Reece Walsh for the rest of the year. You won't win a premiership without a decent, a fullback. You're not going to win the premiership with Nick Meaney. We want Tyron Wishart. We don't have a good dummy half. Well, we don't have a future dummy half.
Yeah, they do. I have like a 22-year-old hooker.
Wade Egan, you want him as your number one dummy half? Go for it.
I wouldn't hate it.
If I'm the Warriors going, yeah, you can have Walsh for the rest of the year. We want Tyron Wishart for the rest of his contract.
Oh, Melbourne's better, better than your.
Melbourne would be like, yeah, maybe.
Better than your 5'8 come hooker.
5'8 come. Yeah. I'm not. Don't bring Manly into this. It's got nothing to do with it.
But, it just seems like the week to rip on Manly.
Hey, we're doing the whole league a favour here. I've never seen so much Manly support in my life. It's disgusting. I want to find out what the West Tigers have got out of this, because they're not just going to do it for free. It's just dumb. I don't know. And I don't know if trade should happen more, and this is exactly what I think should happen leading into finals. We've got a chance of winning. You don't. We need your player. You can have a guy that's not going to be in our finals, but will be good in a couple of years. Here's Tyron Wishart. Give us Reece Walsh. Here's Tyron Wishart. Here's the offered Nofaluma. Weird signing though for Melbourne. I think they really need to target a fullback over a winger, but yeah, I don't think he's going to be the needle mover they need.
I get it. I get what you're saying, but on the other hand, I have never had an issue with Melbourne's recruitment. It's always the right recruitment. Always a point. So I'm okay with it. I reckon it'll be the right decision.
You reckon having Nofaluma will get him closer to winning the premiership?
Yes.
This season?
Yep.
All right. In my opinion, their wingers have only ever been as good as their fullback, so we'll see.
And who's to say they're not done as well?
No, that's true.
They might pick someone up. If they pick up another fullback with David Nofaluma,
then you're talking. It's just interesting. Yeah, yeah. In that article, the three other players that they've outlined, two of the other three players that they outlined, Reece Walsh and Laurie, were both fullbacks. They got knocked back at that. Obviously, they went back to Adokar next because of the familiarity with Melbourne's system. Knocked back there.
Would you say that, like, right now, they got Grant Anderson, Dino Reema on the wings.
Yeah.
You put Nofaluma on the end of that wing, it just...
Oh, it's an upgrade. I'm not arguing that.
Makes me feel all warm inside and happy.
Who's going to get in the ball? That's what I'm worried about.
He's the top try scorer Tigers have ever had on the end of their back line. I think he'll do fine at the Melbourne's.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd definitely take Laurie over Meaney, though.
Laurie's not an option, but Nofaluma definitely.
No, but I'm just saying, like, as a ball distributor to my winger. I'm stoked with it. I just want to keep seeing more of him. I just want to know what the other half of it is, if there is one. Yeah. Callum Ponga.
Okay.
Where are we up to on him?
Well, no one knows yet. He got ruled out. He's pulled himself out of this weekend. And, he's got to still see the damn neurosurgeon about it.
Yes. So he's still up today. He's seen the head injury specialist this week.
And to anyone who's having a go at this bloke, for getting six, whatever, how many concussions and corn and soft and all this kind of stuff. I actually heard a story of a bunch of people calling him up at the pub and ripping into him about being soft. Anyone who's doing
probably the
that,
same guys who couldn't get to work, so hungover.
Pull your fucking head in. Like, despite the fact he got, everyone thinks he's soft because he laid down. He got hit over the head, across the neck, wasn't concussion, but then he got, what happened then? Oh, he got, he hit his head on the ground. He's not soft by any means.
Tell you what, a concussion in the NRL would be worse than any hangover you've ever had.
Yeah, and like, it's just, it really annoys me that what this guy has to go through to play the game. Like, he plays football hard.
And he's punching above his weight grade.
Yeah, and he's looking up. And I just don't understand the fascination about ripping into someone who has an injury. It wasn't him who ruled him out on Saturday. It's the doctors, because he failed his HIA, which clearly means he's concussed in some form.
And we know the NRL has come a long way with regards to looking after players with concussion. But even just simple wording like this first sentence in the article on NRL, before meeting a head injury specialist this week in the wake of his third concussion in 2 months, Knights fullback Callum Ponga is managing his expectations in order to avoid disappointment should he be ruled out for the remainder of the NRL season. Playing again this season, honestly, and I hope in his inner group, should not be the priority. It shouldn't even be.
It's not like we're going to make the finals.
Even as much as he wants to play, he'll be able to play longer in his life if he sits out the rest of this season.
It's not even that. Like, it's not even playing football. This is not what we're talking about. It's about
way of life.
Like, yeah. You know, he's 20, however old, he's like 23 now, I think. Poor bastard's got, what, max 10 years left in him? Maybe. That's lucky if he gets 10 years left in him.
That'd be best case scenario.
Retires when he's 33. And then, you know, he's got his rest of his life to live. And you sit there criticizing him about making a conscious decision to sit out. And I, to be fair, I wouldn't be overly happy if he played in the World Cup. And that way, if he sits out now, round one next year, he'd be fighting pretty damn fit.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately the thing with concussions. You can sit out for months and still have repercussions from it. And there's nothing you can do in the gym to prevent it. Unless you can add like 6 kilos of muscle around your skull. It's not going to happen. Maybe you can change headwear and hit up Steve Menzies. He's got boxes of it.
Tell you what, the guys on the thing going, oh, I'll bet you'll be out chasing girls on the weekend. Why the fuck not?
Yeah, it's not going to hurt your head. Maybe your other one. All right, we just got the good news. Was not on tonight.
Oh, fuck.
Boom. I'm such a dick. I hate myself sometimes. Anyway, so behind all the news and stuff that we heard about, St. George has sacked Anthony Griffin's two assistant coaches, Matt Head and Peter Gentle. Now, I think Ryan's CEO, Ryan Webb, quote, "We're looking for the right structures supporting our coach in 2023. Now, that sounds as though Griffin's going to be safe. We were trying to get the timeline sorted here, but both Gentle and Head were there before Anthony Griffin. Head's been in and around the St. George club for quite a while, both as a player and coach in different levels. Gentle has been coach the Illawarra in the New South Wales Cup, as well as winning an SG ball premiership with the Tigers before returning to coach the Dragons NYC side. So they've both been in and around the Dragons coaching setup in some way for a period of time, and both predating Anthony Griffin. Now, in the world of the NRL, there's not a lot really known about assistant coaches unless you're a follower of one club, one sport, and you pay all your attention to them. You know the playing careers and stuff, careers, coaching careers of all the players inside and out. I am one, and I'm one to prefer transparency in a league. the majority of other sports I watch, if there's assistant coaches, they're known as an attacking minded coach, a defensive minded coach, a special, like a set play coach, a kicking coach, whatever it is, they've got a specialty or they've got a section of the team that they're in charge of. What I'm interested in this St. George decision, what were these two in charge of? Hence why I wanted, well, he'd probably know. And how does the club go about replacing them? So most other sports, if there's two assistant coaching positions, one is picked by the coach, one is picked by the club. They both still agree on each other's, but they both get, let's say, a priority decision based on the style of play they want their sport team to do. I'm interested to see if St. George will do something like this. Will Griffin get all control of who he picks as assistant coach? Does he want one? Does he want two? Does he want three? Will he get one? The club get one? Will the club hire all of them? And Griffin will have to change his style. I'm really interested. I want to see who they bring in, and I'm really interested to see what the reasoning is for it. Have you seen what I couldn't see, Jared, and his head's just disappeared, whether there's a timeline for when they're going to be bringing in assistants or whether they're not going to look at it till next year and they're going to take their time, which...
Well, they're going to use it for the rest of the season to find their new assistants.
Yeah, I just think it's a very weird time. Like, they're going to be here for the rest of the year. Is that the understanding still?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That makes... just want to ease the concerns of people thinking that they were gone now. I should have clarified that at the start. But are we expecting any change of Dragon style of play then for the rest of this season?
No, not at all.
Me neither.
It's too, look, I kind of disagree. I'm very interested in the assistant coaches.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm just saying it's not like a lot of other sports. If you say, oh, you know, the assistant coach there, they're like, oh yeah, he's known for this or this or this, almost straight away. You go, tell me the two assistant coaches at Canberra.
I know this, Monaghan and not Campisi. It used to be a half for him. I can get back to you on that.
See, that's what I mean. And what does Monaghan do for the Raiders? What's he in charge of?
Well, it used to be a halfback, so I'm guessing the attacking.
Let's see. The clarity's not there unless you follow Cambridge. Yeah, but you can tell me Newcastle, right?
Oh, yeah, Eric Smith and Willie Peters.
So what are each of their roles?
Well, Eric Smith is attack and Willie Peters is defense.
Okay, so they'll both be let go at the end of the season. But it'll come with you walk straight into that one. I'm really interested to see which direction Dragons go in this in all aspects.
Wall believes that Jamie Sowell would be put on, which wouldn't be a bad decision. He's killing it in the women's, and he's supposedly a very attack-minded coach. I
could see that.
I'm more curious about who got rid of him, who decided to. So I'll be interested to see, because assistant coaches genuinely get 1 to 2 year contracts. They float in and out everywhere. Every year, it's not a headline. It's more of a paragraph at the bottom of a paper club that this bloke moved on. Like, I'm pretty sure David Ferner has moved to about 4 different clubs in the last 4 years. Newcastle.
Cartwright.
He's at Dogs now, stuff like that. Cartwright's at the Broncos right now. Stephen Kearney.
Before you go any further, this is off Zero Tackle. It says that they've written Anthony Griffin has started clearing house as he looks to iron out the inconsistencies and build a team capable of challenging. However, there's a quote from the Dragon CEO, "We're looking for the right structure supporting our coach in 2023.
It could be a
bit of both.
Yeah. So here's the thing. If that's true, that means if Griffin's clearing house, that means he's got the job next year. If it's the NRL, if it's the board clearing out, it means Griffin's job is unsafe.
Well, it's supporting our coach in 2023. If they're going to clear out all of them.
For me, that's just the board backing up Griffin.
Okay.
I could be wrong. You'd be completely off. For me, you know, assistant coaches flit in and out. It's a really important thing that you've got to keep an eye on. You know, as a coach, you've got to have the right people in place. As Adam said, Newcastle probably don't have the right people in place currently. But on the other hand, you know, and I was quite wrong. I actually assumed Griffin's been coaching there for about 5 or 6 years. It turns out it's only been since the end of 2020. Well, pulled me up on that. But, you know, you got a coach who's been around for two to three, four years. Generally, they don't inherit at that point. They've molded what they want.
Yes.
And Matt Head was around before, but Peter Gentle, he's an ex-assistant coach who used to work with Anthony Griffin and under Anthony Griffin at the Broncos, because Peter Gentle's been around for years and years and years at the Broncos. And Griffin took him from Broncos down to Fink. So that, for me, means that if Griffin's taken this guy down and then turned around 18 months later, because if you don't remember, he coached Broncos for five games after Anthony Seabold was fired in 2020. And then Walters took over in 2021. So if he's only lasted 2 years being brought in by Griffin, because he's clearly Griffin bloke, I see that either the NRL, the board going, here's an ultimatum, Griffin, I need you to start getting rid of your old Broncos buddies, or someone's undercutting Griffin to go, mate, I'm going to start taking away the support you within the club. Because, you know, there's a reason Griffin worked with Gentle for 10 years and brought him into the Dragons. So I'm a bit concerned on this one. It's the same, the whole thing.
It could also be a bit of one of each, though. Like when I was talking about in the hiring, what I'm used to seeing is a coach gets one, the club gets one kind of thing. This could be, we're getting rid of ours, you've got to get rid of yours because we're not happy with either.
I wouldn't be happy with that as a coach.
See, I touched on this. The ultimate hiring and firing comes from above the coach.
I touched on this a couple of weeks ago. I said, because when I said about, you know, how hard it is to jump up from being an assistant coach and to the NRL coach, I'll give a quick rundown of that. As assistant coach, your entire focus is on your job as the attacking coach. You know, you work with the halves.
If that's how the club sets it up.
Yeah. But you have a very specialized role as assistant coach that you just do. When you pump up to NRL head coach, you've got to look after every coach, plus the pathways, plus the selections, plus the recruitment, plus that, which is a lot more stuff than most assistant coach. And then you add a media on top of that.
Oh, yeah.
It is a lot less stress to be assistant coach because you're not in the spotlight as much and all this fun stuff, whatever. But I think what I'm saying is that if you're going to be a head coach and you live and die by the results on the field, which, you know, we all know is 100%, if I walked into a club and they told me, you know, we get one, you get one, and you don't even know the bloke that the club's bringing in, I would not like that. And I guarantee you, with the NRL clubs chasing, what's happening right now, Cameron Serrato, when a new club needs a coach and they're chasing that hard, if he walks in and goes, I'm picking my assistant coaches, you do not get to say what happens on that football field. They're going to go, yeah, cool, just to get him on board. I 100% agree that a coach lives and dies by his decisions and he gets to pick the assistants.
Yeah, if you ran a club, that's the mantra that you'd abide by, and that's fine. I'm going to say not every club will go along like that. There were literally some people who own clubs because they've got so much money or whatever, and they'll say, whoever our coach is and our coaching staff, I want our club to be an attacking-minded team. And to them, it could be literally at the expense of all defense. So they select a head coach who has a background in attack-minded football. And they'll go out like a walk right, and then they'll fill out from there. Someone
team of BJ Lay Lewis.
Yeah, and then other clubs would be like Jared just said, we own the club. We'll support you in any way. You bring in who you want. And that's why I said I'm interested to see how Dragons go about it. Because there's going to be so many different ways you can.
All I've got to say to finish off on that one, the teams where the board is making opinions about what happens on the field generally fail. There is no way that the Melbourne board are coming in to tell them what Craig Bellamy happens on the field. There's no way that Nick Politis of the Roosters, while he helps the recruitment, Trent Robinson dictates what happens on the field. There's no way, and the best example for that is the Tigers.
Yeah, I don't know. Our thing's a little bit different when we're talking about a board compared to an owner, I guess. I might be blurring those lines.
You've got to have danger signs as a coach if an owner comes in and starts dictating to you.
That's
horrible.
In sport. I'm just having a look at the Melbourne Storm homepage here, and their football department, like if you open up the About on the Melbourne Storm page, you can see a staff listing. Other NRL clubs have staff listing, CEO, coach, and like there's a list of three people. There's Melbourne Storm ones like almost 2 pages long, and they've got an entire section just for football department. Most clubs don't have that. And you'll see it here. It's got Craig Bellamy, head coach, but then you've got Kearney and Mark Bretnell, NRL assistant coach, NRL assistant coach. And that's the information that you provided. It's interesting to me comparing, like being a broad sports lover, other sports I'd see would be defense coordinator, offense coordinator, halves specialist or something like that. So you got assistant coach, you got two development coaches, pathways coach, a video analyst, and then underneath that, John Donahue, defensive consultant, Billy Slater, specialist consultant. So they do, I'd say, draft those people in. But it's not much information from what I'm used to in other sports, but for the NRL, that's almost like an encyclopedia of roles compared to what other clubs put out there. So,
is interesting because what that tells is that everyone's got a specialized role and there's no overlap of anyone's jobs.
Yeah.
Which, fair call. That's easy. The only way that works is if upper management are very clear about what happens within the coaching sector.
Yeah.
It's the only way that one works. And I feel like Melbourne, it does work.
My ice hockey team has just gone through its first coaching change since I've been watching the league. My team's missed the playoffs for 6 years. Somehow our coach has been the second longest tenured in the entire league. He's had that role for 7 years, which is extremely long in ice hockey or in American sport terms, considering they've lost every season. So they hired a new head coach who's only had assistant coaching experience at this level. But now he's got three assistant coaches, and generally Detroit's only ever had two, plus a goaltending coach. So it's a completely different coaching makeup that this club's had over the last almost 20 years. So there's a lot of interest to see how the dynamics there work. And this is kind of like the biggest shakeup, I guess, we've seen in NRL clubs. So, yeah, we're excited to see how it plays out. Let's move on to the casualty wards. So Jerome Luai has been ruled out this week with a knee injury. The defending premiers will also be without Stephen Crichton and Mitch Kenny for the Eels game. So, and we've already mentioned that Caelan Ponga is going to be missing. And Cody Ramsey, however, has received good news. He'll only miss 2 rounds of the comp. So obviously this week. Jaden Sullivan will be back on the field in 2 to 3 weeks after picking up an AC joint injury. Broncos welcome back Billy Walters from a hip injury, but Selwyn Colwell is still having another week off after the concussion from State of Origin. Reuben Cotter has been included in the reserves for the Cowboys as he returns from a hamstring injury suffered in State of Origin camp. Lindsay Collins has been named to return from concussion for the Roosters, while Joey Mann is also being added to the squad. And West Tigers forward Luke Garner will miss his side's clash against the Broncos after picking up a neck/shoulder injury. Raymond Fatala Mariner will miss round 20 after sustaining rib cartilage injury against the Titans. All righty, let's move on to the judiciary. Now, I'll leave the Finucane one for last, but let's go to the Corey Waddell. So he's been found guilty of dangerous contact after being referred directly to the judiciary over eye gouging or an alleged eye gouge on Tino Fasamawale. So this was actually brought to the attention of officials by Tino himself. Match review committee ordered the Bulldogs forward to front the judiciary on an ungraded dangerous contact charge. So he's going to be missing 4 weeks is the length I saw. I'm just having a look here. Yeah, he's found guilty. Four other players have entered early guilty pleas and accepted fines. That's Ken Mamalo, Viliame Kikau, Nelson Asafa Solomona, and Matt Lodge. It's 5 matches for Corey Waddell for eye gouging. Fair? In your opinion? I think that's just one of those defenseless things. Like, you can't really say, I didn't mean to eye gouge. You can say, I didn't mean to eye poke. Like, we've all been poked in the eye in a game, I'm sure, but even in the heat of the moment, you know when your fingers are pressing something really squishy.
Look, yeah, he's an idiot. Like, I know they were kind of after Tino after the whole Origin thing, which I thought was silly anyway. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I guess, whatever. Yeah. Move on.
How you think? So, this is one, and while messaging, say he wasn't with me on this one, he's saying that Finucane had intent and believed it was a dangerous hit, and that's Wall's opinion. So Dale Finucane's been banned for 2 matches after found guilty of dangerous contact. That's the ruling that they gave in the end. I don't believe he was actually penalised in the game. So Finucane ran out of the line definitely with intent in an effort to put a shot on whoever was carrying the ball. It happened to be Stephen Crichton. And was he in full control of his actions? No. To me, it looked more spectacular than anything because of him, his arm swinging, not hitting anything. Crichton already been hit with the head, ducking down. Anyway, he's been suspended for 2 games. So he was looking at a 3-week stint on the sideline. He challenged it, had his challenge successful, but only to the point of a downgrade to a grade 2 from a grade 3. So he'll miss 2 games instead of 3. So in the end, he'll be missing 2 weeks for a head clash in a tackle. To me, this looks very much as the judiciary took the injury into consideration when giving out the suspension. Because I don't know if there's anything in the rule book of hitting someone in the head with your head in a tackle.
Oh, again, I couldn't care less.
This is huge.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Who's going to say next week that a head clash in a tackle was accidental or on purpose?
Mate, I've been saying this to fucking ages and you've not cared about me at all. I've told you for years and years, for ever since all this started, that especially since the shoulder charge rule came in, that like accidental contact, especially from an attacking player onto someone, is never looked at. And now you're going because of accidental head clash is like,
how you got. No, say it again. Say it again. What do you mean, accidental?
Well, accidental contact, if you're running the ball, your shoulder, you propel your shoulder forward and it smacks someone in the head.
That hits the defender.
knocks him out cold with intent.
Yeah.
That's, oh my God, the defender put his shoulder in, his head in the wrong position. This is, and it's the same thing. They both went in with intent. It was just an accident.
Yeah, but this is the first time anyone's been charged over head-on-head collision. I don't get how you charge that.
Well, it's just, obviously, old mate got his ear ripped off.
But that,
why not?
No offense to Crichton, that doesn't matter. If that, in my opinion, if his ear's not bleeding, there's no charge.
Yeah, well, his ear was cut off. Like, I've had that happen twice. Not cool.
So if we're gonna tackle someone in the ribs and break their ribs, you're gonna get suspended.
I just think there's a lot of more things you can die on a hill over, mate.
Yeah, no, this is gonna open up so much. Like next week, it would be surprising if three guys are on report for cracking heads in a tackle.
2 months ago, this would be like the biggest thing we could. The week has just blown this out of the water, hasn't it?
Yeah. I think the Sharks are heavily hard done by here. I think this was much more of a, if that arm had made contact, it would have been worse. We better give him 2 weeks. And the fact that he's bleeding, it should be bad. That's every single tackle in the game is made with intent. It's an intent to stop the ball runner. That's what he was trying to do. They clashed heads.
Make you laugh, stand. Didn't do anything illegal. Make you laugh, stand on something else, eh?
I can't believe you're not. Anyway, I can't wait for someone to accidentally get stood on the hand in the play of the ball, break their hand, and the guy gets suspended for 3 weeks for lashing out with his foot. Oh, disgusting. Anyway, touch footy. Let's move on.
Hey, mate, I'm just giving you a heads up. You just got a cat. Just relax. Just calm yourself down.
Hopefully not for long.
Think of Dylan the cat.
No, his name's not Dylan. I'm going to call him Suki. That's my name for him. Of course they can. They took my name. I'm going to give him a new one. Cats don't respond to names. They're not that smart.
Well, train it better.
No. Let it go, see if it comes back. If it doesn't. All right.
Oh, that's cool.
Wait till Maddie comes home next weekend. There's a goat in the backyard. Now we're talking.
I don't think she would be mad, to be fair.
Oh, 100%. Definitely.
No.
All right, let's move on to teams who will have players there fairly or unfairly. We'll see. We do have 8 games on the slate, and we are going to start with an hilarious matchup. And hilarious for the betting odds, which is brilliant. So we've got Manly versus Roosters. Thursday night, 9th versus 8th, kind of important for the season. Now, Manly have 7 players from their first 17 not playing. Their odds are only $5.50 compared to the Roosters' $1.15. Now, I find that hilarious considering some full-strength squads only last week were paying $7. And yet you've got a team with 7 out and they've got shorter odds. I'm going to say it right now. This is not because of the quality Manly have in their squad. This is how bad some other teams have been this year. How are the Roosters not shorter? How are the Seagulls not further out? Oh, I don't understand. Roosters are as close to full strength as they have been for over a month, and Manly won't field a worse team all season.
I mean, you do have the shadow half Australian halfback playing for you.
Well, you've got the Australian halfback and captain playing, so that's important.
Yeah, the captain is playing for the Roosters, isn't he? The shadow halfback are playing against the Australian captain. So I'm actually agreeing with you. Like, you've... A shadow halfback.
Cleary sat out last week because Origin was too hard for him.
You've also got the starting New Zealand 5'8" playing, which is all right. And then, you know, he still has a better chance
playing for New Zealand.
he still has a better chance of playing 5-8 for New Zealand than Cherry has playing fullback for as captain for Australia. Moving on.
So you must have heard of Jerome Hughes or Dejan Arce.
You idiot.
Or
think about it. Sean Johnson. Think about it. No, keep going.
Who am I missing? There's someone else.
He played 5-8 for New Zealand earlier.
Joe Marnie. There you go.
No, he'll play fullback. Oh, and he'll get there eventually.
Well, New Zealand doesn't matter.
Dylan Brown, you.
Oh, there we go. So, oh, he's from Canada. That's why I wouldn't have thought of it.
Yeah, so you got, you've got the shadow Australian halfback. Captain. What?
This guy wins things.
Well, the only thing that's not shadow about him is you can see over Cleary's head with his massive neck.
If you're looking at captain material, look how he's handled this week.
You know what? You've got
We couldn't buy our way out of it like the Roosters do.
You've got the moral, the moral team playing for you now. The moral high ground team with, they're all very, their souls are intact. I don't know what the word is. I don't know. That's probably too mean.
Who's that? The Manly team?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, players who believe that everyone's allowed to play the game. That's all it is.
Look.
I'm going to go through the score because it's my team and I love them. And Pio Secchi and Alfred Smalley both make their debuts. And these guys have come from completely different backgrounds to get to this spot right now. So if you are looking at putting money on for any reason, very brief background. Now, they both play for Blacktown Workers, who have a record of 2 wins and 16 losses in the New South Wales Cup. This year. So Smalley is 23 years old. He's got 6 tries from 14 games, including a double against Newcastle, which I love to say. One of our only 2 wins. Now, so in the 14 games, he has 6 tries. He's set up 2 tries and is just outside the competition's top 5 for tackle breaks with 65 tackle breaks, averaging just under 5 tackle breaks a game. Now, difference between New South Wales Cup and NRL. He's made 27 tackle breaks in the last 2 weeks. So that's averaging 13.5 tackle breaks a game. Brilliant. He's played 1 test for Niu against Lebanon in 2017. So there you go. You've got an international on the wing. Brilliant. Pio Secchi will come close to Darren Nicholls as the league's oldest debutant. He's just a couple of weeks shy from his 29th birthday. And epitomizes rugby league journeyman. I'm not going to go into the full details, but listen.
Hold up.
Yes.
Who's the highest? Who's the oldest debutant?
Darren Nicholls.
Who?
Darren Nicholls.
Who?
Darren Nicholls. Oh, sorry, Mark Nicholls. I wanted to say it enough times to try and catch up with how many times you said it. So, long running 6 AM joke. Born in Fiji, Secchi played in Fiji first before earning a scholarship that would take him to Innisfail. He graduated the Malmeninga Cup with Northern Pride before travelling south to the Canterbury Bulldogs. Didn't get a first team crack there, so he went back to Queensland, then back to Fiji, where he made his test debut for Fiji and then was named for the 2017 World Cup. He never made the tournament. He played 2 more tests for his country since then, impressed enough to return to the Q Cup with Ipswich. Then he returned home to Fiji to suit up for the Fijian-based New South Wales Cup Ron Massey team, the Kaivedi Silktails, moving to the second row. Then he went to French Rugby League before returning to Australia and joining Blacktown. So this guy's got frequent flyer miles, and now he's about to make his NRL debut. He's 195 centimetres tall and the cousin of Tui Kamakamika. So he's only played 4 games in New South Wales Cup. He's got 3 tries, is averaging close to 130 metres. So he'll be coming up against Daniel Tupou. So it could be the biggest winger matchup of the weekend. So regardless of the external context, their NRL debuts should be celebrated. Who knows? In a few weeks' time, we may wonder how the club ever managed without them. That last bit was off zero tackle.
It would be funny if some guy got dropped after a really good weekend out here.
Oh, the best thing for Manly would be if these two had ripper games and they hold on to their spots for a few weeks. Like Manly's on, in my opinion, Manly has nothing to lose. So
how disappointing was that for you that Morgan Harper is still playing?
Yeah, that was a bit of a kick in the guts. But Ethan Bullamore, all that had to happen for him to get a run is seven players not play. But he's in the starting spot. James Seguiaro on the interchange, and Zach Fulton, grandson of Bob Fulton, has been named, with Sean Kefi being ruled out. So I got that one. The only two things I was a bit upset about is KO Weeks, after making his debut last week, doesn't get a run. And people were saying, well, Seguiaro got picked, he's a dummy. KO Weeks is a 5'8 fullback. I would have just preferred to see him on the interchange and just let him get on there and roam around and just play. And Alec Tuimakivave, I really wanted to see, because he's been on the reserves for six or seven times this year. He got injured in New South Wales Cup 2 weeks ago, and he's been having a really good season. He's a young prop. So I really wanted to see him get a run, but obviously that won't occur now. Morgan Boyle has been named on the interchange. He hasn't played. He's played 90 minutes of football in 16 months. So do not be surprised to see him ruled out, with James Romanis coming off the reserves for his debut, another prop who's been playing New South Wales Cup. Jake Trbojevic, Andrew Davey, Avo, and Lachlan Croker are all back from COVID. Kurt DeLewis gets put in a prop with Paseka, and Dylan Walker's starting in the centres. For the Roosters, Joe Manu's back. He'll be playing centre. Luke Keary's in at 5'8". Lindsay Collins is back at starting prop. This is pretty much the strongest squad that the Roosters have put out in quite a while. What a time to do it. I'm going Manly. Who are you?
You're going Manly? Oh, shit.
On a sad point, though, due to the players' decision not to be there, they will not be attending the game at all due to security reasons. So if you were there, the hell with juice and stuff. Yeah, I'm going the Roosters.
No, I already written down Manly. It's in pen. Sorry, buddy.
Right. I'd be getting, if you haven't already got Joseph Suwali in your fantasy squad, I would. After last week's performance and being back outside Manu against a debutant, as much as I want Smalley to do well,
yeah.
Selfishly, this is the game I'm most looking forward to watching Manly all season.
Funnily enough, Smalley would be 10 years older than him, Brady.
That could be. Hey, at least Manly will win the jersey matchup, because even though it's an alternate, it's still better than half the comps.
Yeah.
Regular jerseys.
Okay, next game.
And we know that's where the games are won.
You Warriors versus Melbourne at Mount Smart. And I'm going Melbourne.
Warriors are only $4.
Yeah, $1.25 to Melbourne. I think this is when they're gonna get back there. Being the same at two, Warriors are a bogey team for Melbourne, especially in New Zealand.
And they squish that pretty much. Like,
look, they're sneaking up on them. If any team, by the same that too, I think, you know, this is the best opportunity in Melbourne to start doubt, you know, pulling the doubters off their back. And yeah, I think they're going to win it comfortably on this one.
Did you see that quote through the week? The last time Melbourne had lost four in a row was 2012. And Bellamy took Cronk, Slater, Smith, and someone else in the leadership group aside. And said, guys, I'm struggling at the moment. I've lost my mojo and I think I've lost the room. And Cronk's reply was, well, you better get it back. Straight back at him and get in there. And then from then, Storm went on a 6-game winning streak into the finals, ended up winning the premiership. I just think that's awesome. Like that you've got that sort of leadership group that Cronk's just going, well, you better get it back. And just like,
in my head, I'm just like, I always have that massive respect for Melbourne, so I can't not.
I know.
And every week I sit there, I'm like, oh, they'll bounce back. And you know what? They will. And
at what point, though?
Well, this is a perfect time for them. Like, they're out of Australia in New Zealand against a very, very not confident Warriors team.
Yeah, it's their second game back at home.
And they're very, you know, they're not... Like their team, you know, Curran's back, which is awesome, but he's playing the second row, which is a lot, every day of the week. You know, they've got a winger playing centre. You know, they're not sure on their team. You know, Walsh is back in the one jersey. I don't believe Harris DeVita is better than Dejan Arce right now.
Oh, Dejan Arce is injured.
No, he's in the team. They've got a
He's in the reserves, but he's got to come over a fitness test. I mean,
I think they've got the strongest forward pack they've had in a long time as well in the team.
Viliami Valia has been named as well in the reserves. That's good.
Yeah, their bench isn't overly strong, and their backline they've still got Olam and Mika. Still got Olam. But any team with Hughes, Munster, and Grant in it, I'm not doubting.
Yeah, it's just they've had that for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, but that'll get better. Okay, we're going to have to go on hold here.
We're going to go Melbourne?
Yeah, go on Melbourne.
Yeah, so we're both on Melbourne for that one. Odds are $4 for the Warriors, $1.25 for the Storm, which takes us to arguably the biggest game of the weekend. You got Parramatta against Penrith at CommBank Stadium. And even though Walt can't join us, how about we do our Knicks picks?
It's Nick Picks.
Because this is Will's pick of the round. After picking a winner in round 18, he had a multi on the Sharks, Parramatta and Broncos all winning head-to-head. Missed last week. But this week he has, I believe, $10 on the Parramatta Eels to win, paying $3.25 with Mike Acebo anytime try scorer. So that gives him a multi odd of $5.10. And he's got $10 on it. And while I couldn't actually find the book with our overall totals, I've rounded them. So as it stands right now, Wall is on $79.60 minus the $10 that he's just put on. Jared's on $96. Where is your bet at this week?
Oh, fuck. Hold up.
All right. You literally talked me to get ready for this bit. So I figured you had yours ready to go.
No, I didn't. Okay. So my bet is going at $17 and I'm putting $10 on it. Tyson Frizzell, anytime try scorer. Josh Adokar, anytime try scorer. And Newcastle to win.
Alrighty. $17, Frizzell, Adokar, anytime. Newcastle to win. Okay, do you have justification? Because I've got Walls ready here that I was going to go through. That's right.
I hate the Bulldogs, and I just can't stand the idea of Newcastle losing to them. So
this is a big one for Jared, because was it mum, dad, brother?
And sister.
And sister, all Bulldog supporters.
And I can't stand the idea of them beating us. I remember last time we went to watch away that Aiden Tolman scored against us twice.
Oof. That's like when Sam Williams scored a double against
us. Oh, it's just like when Andrew Davies scored against Newcastle a couple weeks ago, I think, for Manly. But Tyson Frizzell on that right-hand side, literally the only one who does kick chase. So he's scored a lot of tries through kick chase, and Josh Adokar's just been on a try scoring run recently. So the only thing I'm not confident about is Newcastle winning. The other two I'm pretty good odds on those two.
You remember pretty early in the season, people were worried about Adokar not scoring a try. I think it was more so the players inside him not giving him the ball in the right time.
They keep throwing balls like they were on the weekend. He gets free intercepts. Fuck me.
Yeah. So, Wall's justification for going Parramatta over Penrith sounds like a bloody racehorse agent. following the same pattern as last time they played Penrith, got pumped by 30 against the Cows and beat Penrith. Pumped last week, they will beat Penrith. So what are you saying there? Last time they beat Penrith, they got pumped by 30 the week before. I feel like they've set themselves up for this game to kickstart their run. So remember, Parramatta got belted by the Broncos last week. Louis is a big loss. Sorry, Louis is a big loss as much as Jared doesn't rate him. He unlocks that hole.
No one rates him.
With Luai being out, they'll be forced to go right, and no Crichton is a big loss on that side. Defensively, Crichton is a massive loss. Parra would have easily scored 6 to 7 tries down their left edge last week, not for execution, and Robert Jennings could be in for a long night. Also, don't forget to add my winnings onto my balance from a couple of weeks back. Oh, you little buddy. He wants his money back. Hey, all really good points.
Okay, so this game, I'm going Penrith.
I think
Parra done. You on Parra?
Yeah.
You're back in my play, mate.
No, I'm next just game. Don't think the Panthers will win with the players that they've got out.
Next game, you've got Gold Coast versus Raiders at Cbus. I'm going Raiders to dominate this game. Gold Coast are a bit of a basket case right now. Not really sure why.
Now, Titans put on a hell of a lot of points last week, but they let in a hell of a lot of points. That was a good one.
I don't think they can handle who they got. Like, they won't be able to handle Papali and Tarpany at all.
I honestly think anyone can handle Papali at the moment.
Yeah, but Tarpany Morton makes up for it. He's been, for me, the informed prop of the entire year by a lot.
I'm stoked that Jojo Fifita has retained his position for the Titans. I'm really interested to see how this guy plays for the rest of the year. Hopefully he's still just been given... Hey, man, you knew the NRL. Give it your best shot. But he played with a lot of confidence over the first 2 weeks now. Is this his third week or second week? Ooh, it's all burning together. Third week. And I like the fact they've kept Aaron Clark at lock. I really think, like, this balance of the Titans squad is the best that they've had in a while, with Brimson being back at fullback. And they put Jaden Campbell on the interchange. SASA and Joel Leaf. Three props there.
I actually really agree with that, because Aaron Booth, I thought, would be the starter for him.
Booth's the starting hooker.
Yeah, at the start of the year.
Yeah, I actually, like, you look at Fodder Waker and Fussa Mawale up front, even though it's not my favorite position for Fussa Mawale in this squad. I'll side on Jared here and say he'll have the same impact, because he's not playing with as high a level players around him to do their jobs. I think, like, for the Titans, who the players they've got available, this is their best that they can really put out there at the moment. I wouldn't be surprised with an upset here.
I will say that, I know I said it before, but Bo Fermor has got to be the most underrated player in a competition for me right now. Like, he is the closest in the second row. Like, you got Fifita there, but Fermor will play 80 minutes. He's quick, he's fast, he's got footwork, and he can play with his hands, and he's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's
a plug-and-play player.
He is probably on the top of all, or not maybe on the top, but definitely in the top three or four players at Gold Coast that every team puts on their tip sheet when they play Gold Coast, because he can be damaging on his day. Happening more and more these days.
I think there's some sneaky optimism about the Titans, because the odds aren't extravagant. It's $3, was it $3.10? Yeah, $3.10 to $1.37. I'm going to lean Raiders now, but this is the game, I think, of the weekend I'm going to look a bit more into, so don't be surprised if I've changed my tip by the time I actually put it into my phone.
You better keep Manly as your tip.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
To me, this will be the game of the round, though. Sharks versus Rabbitohs, 5:30 on the Saturday.
Yeah, Sharks $1.71, Rabbit $2.15. Keep an eye on this one. So, as Adam said, Finucane won't be playing. They'll probably bring McInnes into lock and Aiden Tolman on the bench.
Yeah, McInnes is playing lock.
Yeah, so that's a big loss. Like, the attacking prowess of both these teams is going to be so much fun to watch. You know, Mitchell versus Kennedy, really strong runners of the ball, but very different ways. Mitchell relies more on power, and Kennedy relies more on speed. So it'd be really interesting to watch that comparison. But yeah, I'm going Rabbits on this one. Yeah, pretty comfortably in the form they're in, I reckon, and having close to their full strength. Forward pack with Arrow, Cole, Matangi, and Murray, with Totola up front, Cook and Hooker. Saluka Fifita is nothing to be sneezed at. But then you bring David Mowali and Burgess off the bench, is nothing to be, you know, it's pretty good forward rotation there.
I wouldn't be surprised for a late Burgess Saluka Fifita switch, considering Fifita's been named reserves and interchange at best, pretty much for the whole season, albeit outside of big injury concerns for the Roosters before he switched clubs. McInnes and Finucane can play a pretty similar style, so it's not a massive... In my opinion, I don't think it's a downgrade at all, because what you lose with the maybe intensity of Finucane, you pick up with ball playing of McInnes, knowing that he's played dummy half for the majority of his career. This should be a showdown, eh? I'm trying to think of back to last week. Did the Sharks have? Oh, bloody hell. That's what I mean. I was at the Bucks play last night. Who'd the Sharks have? Come on, Jared.
I don't know. I didn't watch the last week.
Lucky it's not a regular league podcast. I'll go.
They got smacked around by Penrith.
They'd started off really strong, then Penrith, overcoming the second half. Rabbitohs at 215, sneaky decent odds there. I'll give it to them because they're on the roll. Again, to me, this one's closer to a 50-50 than anything else. I'll go the Rabbits, though, and I don't know how confident I feel about it. But if I said Sharks, I don't know how confident I'd feel about it either. Flip of the coin for me.
Next game is 5 weeks ago would have been, or 6 weeks ago would have been one of the worst games of the round. Broncos versus Tigers.
It will be one
Tigers
of the worst
$5.
Games
Broncos $1.18. Look, the only way I could see Tigers winning is if they come out severely pissed off about what happened last week. But if they're in their heads and they've spent the week talking and chatting and arguing and all that kind of stuff about what happened in this game after signing last week, they're not going to be ready for the Broncos, especially at Suncorp Stadium on one of the few Saturday night games where, when that happens, Suncorp is packed.
Yeah.
So everyone goes to it because they don't have to go to work that next day, or they don't have to leave from work. They're drinking at the Caxton since like 11 o'clock in the morning. So Tigers better be ready for this, because when Broncos play at home on a Saturday night, they play really well usually, even during their form slump a couple of years ago. They still stood up on those Saturday night games.
I remember one that was a Friday night. Ins for Broncos. We went over Billy Walters. Did you talk about Dean Mariner?
Was back. Yeah, Mariner, he was the centre Adam talked about earlier in the year, that Broncos are popping up. They're going to have probably the quickest team they've had so long. They've got Dean Mariner, Katoni Staggs, DeLuise, Hoyte, Corey Oates, and Tessie New. Very, very quick back line. Very, very young back line too, because you've got Adam Reynolds and Hoyte are the only ones over there. Or probably Oates are over the age of 25. All the rest wouldn't even be 22.
How old's Hoyte?
Hoyte's, I'm pretty sure he's reasonably old.
1994.
So that's 28.
Wow.
Yeah. But Staggs and Mariner in the centres, Broncos hope for the next 10 years. Just keep an eye on that. And Mam in six, that's a very, very attacking driven centre 5-8 combination, and then Reynolds is control. So it'd be very, very interesting. If they had a fullback, well, next year they have Reece Walsh at fullback. Man, that's going to be a good back line. That's going to be, won't be stronger defensively. Sweet Jesus, he's going to be able to put some points on.
What about the Tigers? Are we going to give them a crack after what they did last week against a better squad in the Cowboys?
Well, it just depends where their head's at. Like I said, if their head's still what happened at full time, no. If they're pissed off about what happened and they want to beat the shit out of the next team in front of them, it's going to be interesting. But, yeah, I think that was the best game they're going to play last week. And I don't think they're going to be able to contain this up-and-up Broncos squad.
All right. I'm with you on that one. I'm cut that I dropped Hoyter out of my fantasy squad after only having him for a week, but I was expecting him to be back in so quickly. Broncos for me, first game on the Sunday. Don't be upset if you miss it. Knights versus Bulldogs. Did you just hear crickets? I did.
Oh my god. Okay. Obviously I put my bet on
Bulldogs by how many?
Arsenal win. I'm going Knights, but sweet Jesus. I've got to ask, like, I talked about the debutants on the weekend, last podcast, and Inari Tuala, why I believe he would do really well at the Melbourne system with how good he potentially could be. He's got potential. I think he needs to be put back in reserve grade, and I don't understand why, how that, you know, Tuala is our best center when I went back and looked it up. There's a guy who's 19 years old for Newcastle playing reserve grade. His name, I'm going to get this right because it's a bit, Christian Mapa-Palangi. Last week, he had 4 tackle breaks, 2 try assists and a try against the Dragons. Inari Tuala in the last 2 weeks have just been completely ripped apart. This guy is 6'1", weighs 90 kilos, and he's 19 years old. Put him in the team.
Give him a go. Is it the time to cut the Milford experiment and throw Clifford in if you're going to be holding on to Clifford? Or is he gone?
No, well, he had some severe issues. He didn't even play reserve grade last week.
Okay.
He had some severe health issues in the year, and that's good. So he had some, I don't know, I'm not going to get into what happens, I don't know. But that was the reason he was dropped. And he played a few games. He absolutely killed it in reserve grade for a few weeks, but he hasn't been playing for about 2 weeks in a row. It just depends. If I don't believe Newcastle are going to drop Milford because I believe they're pretty confident of signing another half next year, an experienced half. That's what I honestly believe that, and they're quietly making way with, they lost Jira Mimosa 2 weeks ago. Throughout the week, Salasso Sue signed with Hull. They're quietly cleaning up their fringe players a little bit. So keep an eye on that because I think there is a halfback coming. Because honestly, at the start of this whole thing, I said Milford was a great signing, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But I don't think in the long term, because he's signed with Redcliffe, I just think it's better off to put him in reserves and giving Clifford a run if he's fit.
That's what I said. All right. Last game of the round, which could be. Sorry.
Sorry. Are you going Dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got Dragons versus Cowboys. So talking about where your heads are at.
$3 for Dragons. That's not
horrible. That's what I mean. It's not horrible. They played well in the conditions, albeit in the conditions last week against Manly. We talked about that in the wrap show after last round. For the Cowboys, we've already said that Ruben Cotter's in on the reserves. If he's not right to go, they're not going to push in. They're not in a position where they must win games. Having a look if there's any ins here for the Dragons. I think, is Josh Maguire an in?
I hope not.
No, he must have been there last week as well. So, yeah, Cody Ramsey, Jaden Sullivan out. So, Moses Embiid shifts to fullback. Matt Fengeyes on a wing, Tata Moga, Zach Lomax, Jack Bird's been shifted to center. So that's the change there, which means that at lock, you've got Josh Maguire coming off the interchange. Oh, sorry, he's at 17. Tarek Sims goes into lock with Billy Burns and Jaden Stewart in the centers and DeBellin up front. Luciano Leilua has been named at prop again for the Cowboys. Remember, there was a late shift last week and he dropped back to the bench with Jermaine Tanua-Brown starting, who I thought did a pretty good job. Tomalolo had an epic game again last week. This was close to my value bet. I was going to look at Dragons to win in a Nanai to score a try, but end up changing it. But Dragons are going to want to drag this into a grinding contest. Cowboys are going to want it free-flowing. Two different styles of forward packs going against each other. I'm quite looking forward to this one.
Yeah, cool. I'm not.
Really?
Nah, it's all right. Won't be too bad. Like, Ben Hunt versus Chad Townsend were a pretty good battle. I don't know. I will put it on just to see some attacking football, which both teams, Cowboys especially, are pretty fucking good at. They're very flary tries. Val Holmes is in the form of his life, even better than when he was playing for the Sharks, I reckon, in the grand final. They just look like they're happy playing football.
I'm going to go Cowboys. I reckon they'll bounce back, and they still played well enough. But they had some defensive lapses that they haven't had recently.
Yeah.
I had a student ask me. No, I had a mate ask me at the Bucks, like, who my three favourite NRL players are right now. I went, you know what? I found it really hard to think of three that really, like, really excite me league-wide. But I ended up going with Tamalolo 1 and Valentine Holmes 2.
Yeah.
I think they're my two favourite players league-wide. I'd have a Homer pick 3. I'd have one Manly player in there with my leader Jake of men. Jakubovic. In at number Jake 3.
Jakubovic. Oh, the only leader you have in your team?
No. I love the fact that he gets like all the kudos for being like the best guy in his interviews and stuff. I was like, Cherry's been doing that for a decade. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, but, you know, Cherry backflip, so here we are.
He's talented, more talented than any other half. He's got more skills to his bow. Thank you for that, for recognising that, Jared. My multi for the weekend,
Adam which Reynolds,
you skipped David past Cleary. Without allowing me to do so. I've got two. I'm just deciding which one to go. It all comes down to whether I reckon South can beat Cronulla, and I've said they could, but anyway. I think I'm going with the 12-25. I'm going Parra to win into Sean Lane, anytime try scorer. He's been really good form, poking his head through the line, setting up a couple of tries. I reckon the big boy will get across for one this weekend. So I'm putting $10 down at 12-25. Parra to win into Sean Lane, anytime. Although if I do add South winning head-to-head to that, it jumps up to 26-34. But I've got a big enough lead on you guys. I think I'll just keep it at that. All righty.
Okay.
I think that's here we are. Done and dusted. Oh.
Bedtime. Adam's going to make a snuggly cat.
Hell no. Just for you, sports psychology and people who want to know what the players are thinking, there's a really cool article on NRL.com right now where they talk to a lot of the conversion kickers around the league about what they're thinking before they go to kick, what their routine is and all that sort of stuff. So there's little snippets here from Latrell Mitchell, Ruben Garrick, Sam Walker, Sean Johnson, Adam Dewey, Valentine Holmes. So they've all got different approaches to how they kick. If you're interested in that sort of stuff, jump on NRL.com. Thank you always for listening, supporting the show, rate and review us on your podcast platforms, and we'll chat to you soon. Bye.
See you.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website, all links via the show's bio.